This is Robert Mertolacci of the Mindshare Learning Report. I have a good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment with Dr. John Seely Brown, keynote presenter here at Echo 2012. What a tremendous keynote. It was a packed room this morning. Thank you for joining me, John.
It was great to be here. It was a fantastically active and interactive audience. And every moment since then, we've been engaged in amazing conversations. So I'm very impressed with the spirit of learning, the willing to engage in adventure up here in Canada in terms of what you're doing in your school systems with large. This is a more refreshing point of view than I often find in countries I go to. And in many ways, I think you guys are more on the cutting edge than many of the things I see in the United States.
The challenges are different. It's about context versus content you talk about.
Yes. Well, you know, to me, we don't understand just how much of our thinking is driven by context. And with today's tools, how much we can craft context, not just content. And I think it's interesting to see how today's kids understand so thoroughly their ability to shape a context, because the context is basically digital. Whereas we think of context as something that's pretty much given to us, they think, I modify who I am, I modify the ways I want to interact, et cetera, with all the digital tools that I have.
You talked about having to reinvent yourself three times in the last 6 years to stay relevant in the computer science space.
Yeah, well, it's not just to stay relevant to computer science, it's actually to be at the cutting edge of computer science. So, I had to move from client-server architectures to cloud-based architectures. Once you're there, you have to start thinking about big data in terms of how do you do things called NoSQL rather than SQL databases. And then no sooner did you get that done than you want to think about how to move up the ladder in some ways to looking at how to use graphic processing units that do massively fast graphics that you can use for scientific computation at the same time, Monte Carlo simulations, et cetera. And it just goes on and on and on. And I just think that it's not just picking up slight changes in skills, it's actually completely rethinking how information flows in the chip, all these things that have just become a tremendous adventure if you're capable of thinking of this thing as an adventure.
You speak a lot to education leaders, and you spent many years with Xerox as a chief scientist. Is the movie repeating itself, you know, from one sector to another, from the music industry to the book industry to the education industry, if you want to call it?
Yeah, I think unquestionably every major industry we're talking about is in for radical disruption. People thought that the education industry would be the last ones to get disrupted, and all of a sudden, the last 6 months, these MMOCs, Mookamania, or however you want to look at it, is sweeping higher education, challenging potentially their very existence. Now, I don't quite believe is that dramatic, but the number of calls I'm getting from presidents of universities suggest maybe at least they're thinking is this dramatic. And I think also we got to recognize, as you see here at this conference, that many of the teachers here are being told they have to prepare kids to work in kind of what I call the industrial age. Whereas the corporations that exist today most likely won't be here or won't be here in any recognizable form in 5 or 10 years. And so the whole work style is undergoing radical transformation. And I think that we have to understand it's not just a question of 21st century skills. It's what I'm going to call 21st century dispositions. It's kind of like, how do people develop a kind of a questing spirit? So they're always looking at opportunities to learn. How do they look at connecting? Another disposition is a connecting disposition, where basically if I don't know something, I connect with somebody who might know something. It's like the smartest person in the room is actually the room itself, is not any one of us. How do you think about collective intelligence? But how do you constantly feel willing to explore and to find things out? And, you know, so many people of my generation, you know, think like, oh, if I don't know how to use this new feature, I either panic, I ask for a manual. I don't think about just getting in and mucking around. And if you don't feel confident to tinker with the system,
yeah,
then you're going to run from change. And I think why you see more and more of our industries are afraid to tinker with their own business models.
It's okay to fail.
Well, they are going to fail. The businesses are, if they don't kind of pick up a new tinkering disposition.
Nassau's motto was failure is not an option. I have
right.
a T-shirt.
And I think that today, you know, I like to look at things like high-performance surfing, high-performance skateboarding, anything that's high-performance. You push yourself to the extreme. Unless you're willing to fail, fail, and constantly fail, you're not actually going to be developing new habits, new ways of being. And so I think that the sense of always getting it right the first time is a really dangerous idea.
Yeah. Final thought on creativity versus imagination. You've inspired me to want to read the Harry Potter series now, which I stayed away from, but you're big on imagination.
I'm big on imagination and world building. Harry Potter is building a new world, and kids love it.
Okay?
We are focused on creativity, but we may be overlooking the fact that the real game here in the innovation economy is how do you imagine something that doesn't already exist? You ask yourself the what-if question. How would my life be different if I had this? Now, creativity is important, but if you can't imagine a new world, then all you're doing is being creative about an old world. And so, in many, many sorts of ways, I think we have misguided ourselves to overplay creativity and underplay the ability to imagine, the ability to construct a new world. That also has to do with constructing new contexts and so on and so forth. I think also with transmedia, we're going to find yet more tools to do this. With simulation models, we can construct unimagined worlds now and play them out and so on and so forth. So I think that we've gotten a little bit sidetracked.
Yeah.
And I think that the curious thing about imagination is it also is something that happens in reading fiction. In fact, literature, good literature, often is constructing an imagined world. Look at the texture that is added in those worlds. People can kind of, you know, give you amazing depth, more depth than any movie. That's why movies come from novels, not the other way around. The novel provides the depth, and then you take a slice of it if you're a movie producer and capture 5% of the meaning.
I believe it was Marshall McLuhan that said, "We create the machine and the machine creates us," or something.
Yes, yes. A very wise person. But I think we have to realize that some of the old skills, some of the ways that kind of literacy, I think the importance of literacy is coming back. And I like to think about the fact that if I have to teach innovation, I don't think about STEM education to do that. I think about, in fact, doing the arts. If you can't sketch, you're probably going to have a hard time being able to get your first ideas out there in a reasonable way.
Right.
And so I think that we got to reevaluate the role of humanities, not just as an embellishment, but is critical for helping us imagine just new worlds. By justice, I mean justice.
Fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. John Seely Brown. My name is Robert Martellacci in the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep.
Absolutely.